papermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably.
The Media Project is underway, a half hour of commentary and analysis and even occasionally insight into the news media issues of the week. Our producer, Dave Gastina, is laughing as we say that. I think it's true. It could happen. It could happen. Hope springs eternal. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. There's Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio.
It could happen. It could happen.
It could happen. Right. Absolutely. Rosemary Armeo is here, longtime investigative journalist, former professor of journalism. How you doing?
Good. Good to be here.
Good. And Caitlin Brown, head of the journalism department at the College of St. Rose. What do you say?
Hello.
Well, is that all? How about if we say happy birthday? As we speak, it is Dr. Chartok's birthday, huh?
Happy birthday, Alan.
Yeah, not bad.
Yeah, I'm old.
Yeah, 102, I believe, right?
Yeah,
correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Something like that. One of the online newsletters, actually, I think the Politico newsletter saluted your birthday and said that you were less than that. So
the one thing I can tell you is it all stopped back on Fire Island when we gave us big birthday parties.
Fake news and Fire Island.
Fake news and Fire Island, yes.
No insights this week.
Yeah, the Politico identified you as being 78.
78?
That's what it says?
No, they're right.
In any case, you're...
All of a sudden, I remembered, yeah, it's 78. That's what I am.
So we're just glad that your get up and go hasn't got up and went yet.
Right.
So anyway... Got up and went.
Got up and go on?
Got up and go on. Okay, a listener, Jeff, sends us this point of view. Unfortunately, Jeff writes, the press made Trump and now they can't control him. Unfortunately, it is because of changes in technology that have weakened the press to become more commercial, more about entertainment, less objective, less thorough and detailed. News is now in sound bites that have become shorter and shorter, trying to win shock value. Trump speaks in sound bites. The written press has been dying a quick death. Sorry, that's a long death. And they were once the place where you can count on more thorough and more objective voice. Now local papers are all about generic syndicated stories. Last bit is actually fake news, listener Jeff. Now, local papers are not, in fact, about generic syndicated stories. My particular paper, for example, carries almost no syndicated news. Sometimes we do not have a single wire story in the paper because we have no room for it because we're focusing on local news. So you're wrong there. Sorry, just factually wrong. Anybody else?
Nope, he got it.
I think local news is super important, and I'm glad you are accentuating that, Rex.
Well, absolutely. You know, and the fact is, it's certainly true that electronic media has taken over and that audience numbers are more important there. But our local newspapers are not doing wire content. That's the point. The only way that we can sell these products is to have unique content. That's why we're focusing on, to whatever extent possible, on local.
Correct me if I'm wrong here, Rex, but on occasion when the New York Times has done a superb job of covering something that you just don't have a reporter for, you'll run a New York Times story, won't you?
We often, whenever it comes to national or foreign news, except occasionally, like we used our own Washington correspondent to write what we would call the lead, all the main story on the Mueller testimony, just because he was there and thought he could write it. But why should we send our reporter to do a job that's probably going to be done better by the New York Times or the Washington Post?
Well, when we had resources and luxuries that we no longer do, we would send our own person because you'd be looking for the local angle. That's lost, and I don't think that's such a bad thing. I do believe in concentrating on local news, but the truth is we don't even have the resources to do that well. The Times Union tries, God knows, but you have how many reporters cover all the school districts in the Capital District right now, Rex?
Yeah.
Or how many cover all the city councils? And
right.
Boring as they are, this is where news is made, this is where policies are affected that touch people the most. And we're not covering it. And worse than that, there's no substitute. There's no citizen journals covering this stuff. No electronic media has come in. There is a great big hole, and that allows corruption and bad people to run wild. And we are seeing that.
But Rosemary, don't you think that nature abhors a vacuum and that this offers opportunities, as you have just mentioned, for citizen journalists and others to step in?
Yes, that's true, but newspapers have been going downhill since the 1980s. That's where.
No, since actually the 50s. Remember,
remember
the New York Herald Tribune died in the 1970s. Yeah, newspapers have been vanishing for many, many decades.
So that vacuum is growing. It isn't shrinking, and I don't see anything filling it. you know, even gossip isn't filling it. We don't know what's happening in our own neighborhoods. Do you know who your neighbors are? I don't. I've lived there, you know, parts of most of my life. I don't even know my neighbors.
Well, let me just say that on the Hill, where I live in Great Barrington, there's, you know, a listserv, and everybody posts all the time with the local gossip and the rest of the stuff. And it's pretty good. And then in addition, we have, and Rex is going to slay me for this because I've mentioned her four times, this woman who decided years ago that she was going to start a little local newsletter. She charged $35 for it, and she covers every single meeting in Great Barrington. So it's extraordinary that when I say nature abhors a vacuum, that there are some people who will step in. Of course, I agree with all of you. It isn't happening yet for the most part, but it can.
Can. The economics of it are really problematic. It just, and this, our listener, Jeff, thank you for writing, but give me a solution, because complaining that news is now in sound bites have become shorter and shorter. Even public radio responds to audience. If you don't have an audience, you don't have an entity. And so you have to have programming that people want to hear. Something that sustains it. And to complain about this is not that the media is to blame. That's really a very easy target. The fact is, society has changed. Yes, our attention spans have changed. The biggest change has been digital marketing, the digital marketplace. We don't have brick and mortar stores that have provided 3/4 of the revenue for newspapers historically.
So is it all about whether people want to hear it or not? I know on occasion we have gotten, because we have bureau chiefs, as you know, Rex, all over the place. We have somebody in Springfield, and we have somebody in Great Barrington, and we have somebody in the Adirondack North Country, and they cover it. And every once in a while, but not that often, you'll get a note from somebody saying, what do I care about? What's going on? What's going on in Springfield or the Adirondack North Country? And this is something that maybe public radio does in a way that, or at least this public radio station does in a way that others don't.
It's commendable, yes, but it doesn't substitute for the number of staff members that a local newspaper would have.
Without question.
And I hope that Jeff, our listener, is a subscriber to his local newspaper.
Yeah.
Because the bottom line is that if people are not paying to get the content that they claim that they want, then we are not fortifying our newsrooms with paid reporters to do the work that needs doing.
Well, does one follow the other is the question. In other words, newspapers are making less now, right, Rex, than they used to make?
Yeah.
That's part A. Part B, but they're still, Mr. Mueller, but they are still making money. At least you're making money, aren't you?
Yeah, we are. And some papers have expired, and some have had to cut back because they're making very little money. We were talking on the show a couple weeks ago about the Watertown Daily Times in northern New York, which has historically been just a terrific little local newspaper,
yes,
which now has reduced to 6 days a week from seven because they just can't afford to put out a paper on Mondays where there are so few readers and no advertisers at all. So they're still making money, barely. And unfortunately, the consolidation now, Gannett, which is the largest chain by circulation, is looking to buy Gatehouse, which is the largest chain by number of newspapers, to make what? Gannett House or something. And so you're going to have this consolidation that I don't think is really a healthy thing.
No, you're going to lose more reporters. And that's the whole problem with making journalism a business. Trend started by Gannett in the, 90s, 80s. Ridiculous. You can't do it. And the result is a slimmed down business that doesn't really cover news. Newspapers and news in general is a public trust. I think government involvement, attacks would be a great thing and time to look at it because there's nothing else filling that vacuum.
Yeah, but Rosemary, those newspapers are always judged, the publishers, right? Am I wrong about this? The publishers are always judged on whether they're bringing in a profit, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. That's the problem. And the profit expectations have been extraordinary. Gannett was getting in the 20s, and 50% is not unheard of. And if you do less than that, in other words, you're completely successful and you're making money, you're still considered a failure in the news business. That is nothing more than a burdensome business responsibility. You can't do it.
Yeah, the old days, I think you're right, when Warren Buffett's Buffalo News used to have an annual profit margin of 50%.
Yeah.
Wow. Anybody would be thrilled at 20% now, but
supermarkets get by like under 3.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but the value of new models is also very important. If we have new models of journalism like ProPublica and other not-for-profit sorts of efforts, even partnerships between and within the industry, I think that value can be delivered that way to audiences.
So let me try this on you. There's an old song, My Heart Bleeds Blue Borscht for You. I mean, the fact of the matter is, if you're making 15% and you're a supermarket that's making 3%, who's crying crocodile tears for you?
Well, supermarkets are high volume, low margin. An industry like newspapers, an aged industry, let's say, is lower volume, higher margin. It's just you can't necessarily compare apples and oranges that way.
So what's the answer? Are we going to change the model?
I think it's a great idea. I would love to see, I think, two things that Rosemary just mentioned, not-for-profit journalism and subsidies in the same way that there is, the corporation public broadcasting, which unfortunately is so often constrained, but if you could get a healthy dose of revenue the way the BBC is supported by taxpayers in Britain, a very small percentage of the tax dollars of Britons go to support the media, but it makes a difference.
Or money from Google and Facebook and others who their own business relies on content and newspapers and local radio, and that's going to go away, but I don't know when. The nonprofit, I mean, I've worked now for years for a nonprofit, so I certainly understand and support how valuable it is. But to me, it always has felt like a stopgap because the funding from donors and foundations could go away as quickly as it came. They decided, okay, we're done. We're going to now concentrate on name anything else that's in trouble right now, foreign policy or women's rights, and forget newspapers and news. And then what? What do you do?
And you know, Rex, I want to take a certain amount of caution, not saying you're wrong because you're never wrong. But I do want to take a certain amount of caution with this stuff about the corporation's CPB for public broadcasting. And that is that there is a fight even there going on. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting often tries to give money to their favorites. So, for example, they may make up their minds, and National Public Radio may make up its minds, that the small stations, and I can give you the reasons for that, the small stations, which, you know, have less, five people or just one more, are the ones who should get the money from the government and not the bigger stations which are successful. Now, that's a fight. People will argue about it. But, you know, I think what happens with school districts is they start to combine, right, when they can't make it on their own. And I do think that that may be the model for the future with public broadcasting also.
Interesting. By the way, to Rosemary's point about not-for-profit newsrooms, let's pay tribute to a not-for-profit newsroom that's had a big impact in Puerto Rico.
Yay.
It was the Center for Investigative Journalism, which is locally known in Puerto Rico as CPI. A not-for-profit newsroom that did the reporting that has brought down the governor, the corrupt governor of Puerto Rico.
Once again, a little song, a hymn to investigative journalists who are the real saviors of many of our values. We had Julie Brown from the Miami Herald who brought out the Epstein situation, and now this in Puerto Rico. Those who trust government to police us, who say, listen to the president, that's the real source of all truth. Listen to this. No, it isn't. It comes from investigative reporting.
And what's really interesting about the situation in Puerto Rico is it started, the leak of those emails that the governor had produced, or texts, started at a very local blog. It was picked up by a local journalism group, and then CPI got it. So that it doesn't get any more local than that. So the downfall of the governor of Puerto Rico is a direct result of local reporting.
Exactly.
So I want to refer you to my earlier remarks, which I think were somewhat profound, which is that nature abhors a vacuum. And as you point out quite correctly, it was the local people who were doing the work and being picked up by others.
Yeah. So how about that? Anyway, thorough discussion. Thanks to Jeff, our listener. This is the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. Alan Chartok, Kaylin Brown, Rosemary Armeo, and Rex Smith here with you this week. And we are very glad. We have witnessed quite a media explosion in the coverage of the presentation by the former special counsel, Robert Mueller, which aired wall-to-wall on networks. Let me just read you headlines, different headlines, so that you get a sense of it. From the New York Times, Mueller's labored performance was a departure from his once-fabled stamina. That's a sidebar now. New York Post, Mueller's testimony equals end of any Trump impeachment talk. From CBS, Mueller sticks to the script in day of grueling testimony. From Mediaite, this is painful. pundits questioned Mueller's frail performance at the hearing.
Yep.
Well, that's interesting. A lot of analysis of the Mueller presentation went to the question of whether he was stumbling too much. I thought that given the nature of the questioning, how much he had to keep track of, and the fact that the people who were interrogating him were scripted, of course, and he had to rely a lot on his memory and on the report in front of him, I thought he did well. But, you know, a lot of people said, no, he was just too old, too feeble.
Hate to bring this up with Alan in the group here, but no, he did not make a good argument for keeping old white guys in charge of our most important processes.
Okay, I quit.
Here's what happened in the media. This is why I fault the media. First, including on the roundtable, we built this up as, oh my God, you have to watch this. It's going to be amazing. It's going to change everything. Building up, again, just as in advance of release of the report, unfillable expectations about what he would do. Then we have the reality of that stumbling, painful, grueling process in which he said really the only new thing he said, he then backtracked and said, no, I didn't really mean it. So that's problematic. And now we have it's all thrown back on Congress, which is partisan, divided, cowardly, not going to do anything. And what's left? Trump gets to stand up and say, wow, another victory for me. It was a hoax.
You know, we keep
repeating the pattern.
With all due respect, I think you overstate and generalize too much. It was not true that it may be that on the roundtable you built this up too big. I don't know. I didn't hear it, but I heard.
Listen to the roundtable.
What? He has a newspaper to run so that people can learn.
I'm actually trying to do the job here. The fact is that a lot of journalists who cover this all the time were saying nothing's going to come out of this. That he's not going to, and he had already said he wasn't going to. All the people leading up to it that I was listening to, especially the New York Times, for example, if you listen to The Daily, the fine podcast from The New York Times, which yes. I do listen to, yes. You know, they had a thorough advance yes. report saying, not really going to be much here, right?
And it's not a big surprise because Mueller was resistant to this in the first place because it's not about spectacle. It's about the facts. And he has hundreds of pages of documentation that lay out full well what happened in this instance.
Hey, I have to say I said it. I did say it was not going to be.
Oh, you did not. Oh, my God. When I was talking about the roundtable, I meant you specifically, Alan.
Take the Fire Island ferry. I'm frankly with Rex, to be honest with you. I think a good deal came out of this. And I think the fact that Chairman Nadler's opening statement was exactly on the money. And the fact is that Mueller came forth and said in very specific terms that the president was lying. And I think the American people who need to hear that, meaning the people in the middle, heard it.
And he also said the president was not exculpated either. So that's an important fact.
None of that justifies 7 hours of gavel-to-gavel coverage any more than Trump's rallies deserve that kind of coverage.
What do you mean
media,
justifies?
It does not.
Justifies?
It does not.
This is a matter of Nadler's.
Listen, you can out-yell me, but I want to make my point here,
and
Alan.
And you too.
Nadler made his points in the first 10 minutes of that hearing, and I listened to that and said, oh, this is going to be great. And that was it. That was the last good 10 minutes. If we covered it in a different way, I think that we would help to clarify the debate rather than lead to what we have now, which is each side, left and right, arguing that, oh, look what, it proved my point. That's why Mueller was wrong, saying read the whole report. 500 pages will not be read by most of the population, so you end up with a few partisans reading it and making their point directly. Did not clarify.
Well, hold on. What should the media do? What's the criticism? What was wrong?
Cover it. We read it and say this
we
is
did.
A,
that
these
has
are the main
happened.
Points.
That has happened. That has
You're
been
right,
that,
Rex.
That has been going on for months. The report came out. There is thoughtful analysis. There are good stories, and people still have not been. Nobody's moved off the dime. We are talking
about individual coverage, which I at the New York Times, the Washington Post, Politico, all have done amazing jobs. Daily, the podcast, absolutely. But what we're talking about is a media landscape that's now bifurcated. It's undercut by social media. And so the overall effect is exactly what
so
I said.
So who's to blame? You're blaming journalists for doing their job.
I do not think we've done a good job as journalists,
but I don't blame them. Who are you blaming? You said the New York Times is good. These people are good. So my paper is I'm talking about we need to cover local news. And so we're trying to do that with our resources. So what should I have done differently?
Rex, Thanks. You're right. You're right, Rex and Rosemary.
What should
is
Alan
wrong.
Have done differently on public radio? What should NPR have done differently?
And I certainly did, by the way, just to clarify the record, say nothing was going to come out of it that was unusual because we heard it all in the beginning.
You went and frankly, on and on about how the potential was enormous and you'd probably nothing would happen. But on the other hand, it could blow this open. And that expectation was over and over again, not just on NPR, but everywhere.
You know what? I was listening very carefully. I think a great deal came out of it. And you
that's
know
because
what?
You're on the left. The right will tell you nothing came out of it. Because our coverage allows both sides to say, look, I'll quote the Bible and it proves my point. That's what happened.
What are you, Attila the Hun? On the right?
What happened, Alan, wouldn't you say, is that the American public had an opportunity to bear witness to its legislators in action and that they got to see their legislators politicking and using this Mueller report, right, exactly, as a political football to better their positions.
And they should have done what? What should they have done?
Okay, I think there's room here for some really clear reporting about how Congress and Nadler in particular are using the press and Mueller to do their job. This clearly is a legislative matter, and they never act, and we are not getting enough criticism.
You couldn't be more wrong. I got to tell you, that's how this guy, Trump, who's awful, got to be president of the United States by doing that, and you got to fight fire with fire sometime.
You don't think he became president of the United States because there are so many people in this country who feel disenfranchised and not paid attention to, and they want someone to hear them?
Not when you lost by 3 million votes in the popular vote.
Well, that's Russian influence. Where's the media calling?
No, it's not
calling for action on interference in our election or on Obama, who didn't do enough. The New York Times did something on that. I take that back.
But
we don't. We are not. We are not providing clarity and direction. We have become part of the partisan divide.
I don't know what to say. I don't know what else could be done. I mean, what are you supposed to do? The president lies and lies and lies, and he is called on that by the media.
And nothing happens.
So that doesn't, you can't blame everything on the media.
So we get back to your question of who to blame, and I don't just blame the media. I think we have not done our job, but neither have our voters, especially voters who don't vote, who say it doesn't matter, who don't educate themselves or listen to any of it, to schools, who avoid the whole thing because they don't want to get into politics. I can blame many people for this. We have a societal meltdown.
Yes,
but the media
do.
Does not get high marks.
Yes, we do,
either.
And so far we have Mussolini in the White House, and I'm not kidding.
But Rosemary, Alan, I'm sorry, but Rosemary's point just there about people are not educating themselves is a very, very valuable point.
Listen to Caitlin. Go.
If people choose to be intellectually lazy, which is one of my sister's favorite comments, then what? What is to be done for people who choose to look away?
Well, you better find something to do, and you can't blame everybody for just looking away. The fact
is, we can, and the result is Trump in office. Everyone looked away.
That's right, and that's so easy.
Didn't happen in Puerto Rico. That state, I'm talking over you because I'm going to win this. In Puerto Rico, people demonstrated and they won their point. Why is that not happening on the national level? Because they're not as involved as Puerto Rican citizens.
Well, because we haven't had the tumultuous effect of all the Puerto Ricans finally got fed up after the hurricanes, the corruption. Maybe things just haven't gotten
20
bad
women
enough
have
for
accused
most
the president of being a sexual predator. He
right.
has been accused now of at least 2 felonies he didn't get indicted on. Epstein, what will it take? Rex, what's it going to take?
I think it will take a conflagration. I really think that it's going to have to
be a big fire in Washington. That's coming because the planet's melting.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, I forgot climate change.
You go back and read Rex's editorials in the Times Union. I think he's covered everything you've talked about, to be perfectly honest. And I think it's just so unfortunate, Rosemary. You're taking the easy way out and just blaming the media on this. This is ridiculous.
I'm not just blaming the media. I just made the point that I blame a whole lot of people. But the media has not been a hero. We've not solved it.
Well, blame yourself, Rosemary, because you're responsible.
I do.
As easy for me to say, as easy as what you're saying.
I absolutely do. I feel like a failure, and I do think that we are doomed. I've said that repeatedly.
What do we do about being in the middle of Trump's lies? Brian Stelter of CNN, who covers the media for CNN, has written an interesting essay that's part of his show talking about how often the president lies and how it is important for the press to call that out. But it doesn't make any difference because there has been so much of it that people have become inured to it, right?
Well, no, because it's all about race and privilege. That's the answer. The haves who vote in larger numbers than the have-nots have been able to carry the day. The day that Rosemary's right, that the people who have needs get activated, that's when things will change in this country. And it happens every once in a while.
It's almost as though the brain adapts. That's one of the experts that Brian Stelter quoted, who runs a brain lab, who says that the more people lie, the less they feel the emotional reaction that the brain usually gives you when you hear a lie or when you lie. And maybe, to Rosemary's point of criticism of the press, maybe there's some way to put the lies more front and center. The problem is that then you have 40% of the country who thinks that the media is biased against the president, because even though he lies about things that people can see clearly, they forgive him for it because the supposedly, well...
Yeah, I don't think that our audience has missed the point the media has made that he's a big fat liar. The new Pew study shows 69% yes. of people don't trust the government that they're lying. They just don't care that he is lying.
That's right.
But they would care if there were stories that talked about the reason they are in the situation they are in. If these are people who are disenfranchised, which seems to be the case, reporting needs to keep doing its job and get the stories out that depict what is happening to their money. Why aren't they getting food on the table? Why can't they pay the rent? If we have stories that talk about what are the problems that these people are facing and offer them some solutions or explanations about why, perhaps one by one, something will change.
And that brings us full circle, because these disenfranchised people are in places where there's not a lot of media and where the media that's there is failing or closing.
Exactly.
Very important point. The news deserts that are springing up, or the virtual deserts where the little tiny papers are just a shadow of their former selves, they can't do the kind of reporting they used to. And people have, since the advent of Fox News, there has been this increasing siloization of audiences, so that we're only listening to what we want to hear. In the words of that great philosopher Paul Simon, a man hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest. Lie, lie, lie. Anyway, lie, lie, lie. Okay, that's all we have for the Media Project this week. It's true. It's over. Alan Chartok, the birthday boy, has valiantly...
78 years old.
Rosemary Armeo, thank you. Caitlin Brown, as always, and to our producer, David Gustina, we thank you. I'm Rex Smith in the Times Union. Thanks for joining us on the Media Project.